You're listening to Coach Your Brains Out. This is part two of our conversation on embracing failure with Kevin Hambly. Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
People forget that you, with all your success as a coach, people forget that you were a really high level player. Obviously, we talked before the show started about your dominance at Royal High School, out where I grew up, and you played at BYU, you played professionally in Europe. Are there any failures as an athlete that stand out that were kind of most important to your growth?
This is going to sound crazy, but maybe the most important one, when you ask that question, the first thing that pops into my mind is I played Pop Warner football. And I was a tight end and I was a kicker. And we went on this, we were playing San Fernando football team, which was the best team, and we had a chance to beat them. And when you kicked extra points, it was worth 2 points. If you ran it in, it was worth 1 point. And so I had never missed an extra point. So every time we got a touchdown, we ended up with 8 points, which is a huge advantage for us. Anyway, San Fernando goes down, they score a touchdown, they get the extra point. Late in the fourth quarter, we score a touchdown, a chance to basically win the game, and I missed it. And I went to go kick it, and I was so anxious, and I was so nervous, and I wasn't really prepared to make that kick. And my foot basically moved at a snail's pace, and my toe kind of caught the ball, and I tried to flick it over the goalpost, and it barely made it to the goalpost and bounced off. And in that moment, I let my entire team down, and I think in that moment when I started to understand what competition was, I started to understand what teammates were, and I'd never wanted to, I wanted to make sure I did everything I could to prepare myself that that wouldn't happen again. This is 12 and under, but I can remember it like it was yesterday, and I remember how I felt, and it helped me so much as I developed, got further along in volleyball. Like when I started to feel those same emotions that I had, I figured out how to manage those, and how to manage my mind and how to manage all that. It really shaped who I was as a competitor. It's weird that a game that early in your career would do that, but it was really important to my whole team, and I really let everyone down, and it should have been something so simple that I just allowed my emotions, and I wasn't prepared first, and I allowed my emotions to kind of take over, and I had to figure that out as an athlete. So I don't know if that's, that's not college, that's not Royal, that's not basketball, that's not any of that stuff, but that moment shaped me 100%.
And then I guess lastly on failure, does your message to your players on failure change from practice to competition? Are they still, encouraged to stretch and be loose, or is it more we're competing now? Does the response change when there are failures?
That's a great question. We have never talked about it in that terms. We always talk about practice. And in the match, it's it's more about like trust the work you've put in and, trust the changes you've made so that you can kind of rely on those. And what I will say is that if they do make a mistake in the match, that's something we've been working on. Then we celebrate that the same, but it's not something we talk about up front, like, hey, go fail a lot. It's more like when they're doing something we worked on, then we'll celebrate that. And a good example, and this was coming from our entire team, but Megan McClure in the final match in the third set, it's getting a little bit tight. I think it's Wisconsin's within 2 points. Catherine, I think, bumps at a ball from 25 feet off. And one of the big things we want to do is be able to jump, take a step close and take a swing on anything we can get in rhythm on. And she goes up and she's at the 10 foot line and she absolutely goes for it. A really tough ball and rips it. And my entire team celebrated that. They all celebrated that, even though it was a big point, but they were like, that's awesome, Megan. And to the point where when Jenna Gray was asked after the match by Holly Rowe, interviewed her and asked her after the match, like, what's the legacy you want to leave? She referenced that and talked about how important it is to like go for it and to not be afraid of that failure and feel safe to make those mistakes. And that was her answer about legacy based on just that little moment there. So I think we embody that, but that's not something that we address like, hey, go out and fail like the same you would in practice. It's more like, we all know what you've been working on. And if you make a mistake in practice going or in the match going for that, man, we're going to celebrate that the same.
That's great. It's a great story. So we have a first-time topic here for our second part of this conversation. We're going to get into some history, which both you and I have a interest in learning and studying. And I guess I'm wondering if you find any value. Like, is this just like a kind of a hobby that you enjoy getting into history, or do you think there's value as a coach to studying history?
Well, I think, yeah, it started out as a hobby. And like everything, I think when you're a coach and you're just as obsessed as I am about just trying to learn and grow as a coach and be better, everything I read or come across somehow spills back into like coaching. And so I think it started out because I was just curious and felt like that I didn't really understand history when I was in high school. I just got through it, you know, remembered the dates and put stuff down and did what I had to get through it. But there's a lot of interesting things to learn and things that I didn't really know that I wanted to. And so I started diving back into it. But then what I found is there's just great examples of leaders and problems and issues that have come up. And I find myself thinking about those in situations, you know, that come forward. And so they've certainly helped me grow as a leader and grow as a coach, just just being able to hear how other people solved issues or how they managed difficult situations or, you know, and whatever comes up, you know. And so I think for me, that's helped me grow just as a reference and say, like, how would I handle that and start to ask myself some of those questions. I mean, a lot of it is too, I just really enjoy it. I mean, it's just really interesting to me to hear history, especially if you get into the right kind of books. Mm-hmm.
And have you ever shared lessons from history with your team? Is there value in those discussions, do you think?
I think the one book that we use it as a piece of history that we look at through the context of history a little bit, but then becomes philosophy, is Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. You know, it talks about World War II, and that book, I think, you know, it's not a history book, but that book comes to mind with that, where it's talking about the Holocaust and what that is. And so it gives us a chance to kind of talk about that. Right now, to be honest, we're talking about looking at a lot of history, you know, like a couple of my athletes are, because of what's with the social injustice that's been for centuries, but that's really coming to light right now. Just, you know, we started talking about what do they know about you know, Tulsa in the 1920s, and what do they know about Wilmington in 1898. And so we started to share some of those books and looking at doing a little bit of a history book club, the social injustice that's taken place for a long time, and get some context to that. You know, when they watch 13th, and a couple of my athletes have read The New Jim Crow, which is those two, you know, kind of hand in hand. But as we started talking about history and I brought those things up, they just, the athletes that have started to read that just can't believe that these things have happened in our history. And I'm like, man, there's so much more that you wouldn't believe that have happened. And so that doesn't necessarily help us, like, in the context of playing volleyball and siding out, but I think it helps us grow as people, which is part of our job as coaches as well.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like the appropriate time to learn from our history. So a lot of the textbooks we get as kids growing up that we go through in history are pictures and stories with mainly men, mainly white men. Are there any stories of female leaders that you share with your team that you think need to be heard?
Well, I think unfortunately, I mean, we actually did this, my team, 10 years ago. I remember it. It was 9 years ago, actually. We said, just ask the question in practice, because I'm raising kids, right? So I'm raising daughters, and I just asked my team, I'm like, hey, give me some books with some really strong female protagonists, even just fiction books, you know, and they could name like one or two that books. And one of them was Hunger Games, which is kind of a reluctant strong character, you know? But I think, and that's kind of a sad statement, and that it's really all white men. Like, name some historic figures that are really covered that are black men or that are Native Americans. I mean, it's really hard to find. You have to really search for that and find a book where someone's taken the time to write that book. You're not going to find it in the normal textbooks, like you mentioned. And so some of the books that I've had some of my athletes read in the past that were about females was Joan of Arc. Joan of Arc was an incredible warrior and just I mean, she's a great female protagonist if you look at it as a story, but a great figure from history. You know, she was probably a little bit crazy, but her will to fight and her will to keep fighting under some unbelievable conditions is just remarkable. I read the book that I should have looked that book up. I can't remember the name of it, but I can send it to you guys. But it was that book I found on Joan of Arc was incredible. Other ones, Harry Tubman is another book that I had a couple of players that asked me for some recommendations of the book that I gave them. But I mean, honestly, like I guess I read a book about Susan B. Anthony a while back, but you know, those characters are, there's not enough of those books out there, I guess, especially for women, especially for African-Americans. Mm. It's disappointing.
Yeah. We need Billy's next fantasy book to have a female lead. I don't know if you've read Good Blood. It's really good, but now maybe we're talking into it.
Yeah.
Put it on your queue.
I'll add it. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you were to give coaches who are listening to this that aren't fans of history one book to read, I know you've made some suggestions already, but what would it be?
I would say if you want to start to look at history different, read People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. That would be the book that I'd recommend to most people. It looks at the history of the United States to the people that we oppressed. So, you know, it starts with the Native Americans, then moves to the Africans and slavery, and then it goes to the Japanese and the Chinese and women. And it's an incredible book. I don't know if either of you guys have read that book, but I absolutely highly recommend it. And it was the book that I was longing for when I started to read the history books, and none of it made sense. Like these men that are the founding fathers of our country, they're rebels. Why are we portraying them as deities? That doesn't make sense to me. Like, let's just let them be these rebels. And I think it never made sense to me. Those things never lined up as far as how history has been taught in school. And so this book just felt more real to me. And so, the way he tells it isn't storytelling. It's all historic documents, just kind of lining them up. So have you guys read that book? Have either of you read that book?
I don't think I have, but I want to now.
No, but I just put it on hold.
Yeah, it's an incredible book. It's worth taking time. It's a big one. It takes a while, but it's worth it.
I got you had recommended Battle Cry of Freedom. I just got that one in about Civil War. I'm excited to start it.
Yeah, I love that one because it dives into all aspects of the Civil War, the economy, industry, like all that. I think you'll love it. If you love history, I can't imagine you won't love that book, John.
Yeah, I'm excited. All right, so we want to finish with some listener questions.
Okay.
First one is from listener Andrew Fuller. He asks, how much of your blocking and defensive strategy is statistically driven versus in the moment reads?
I would say all of our blocking and defensive philosophy is about teaching the players some principles, and one of those principles being how to read the game the best that we can. And then we give them the freedom to make moves inside of that. So it's mostly about the read. Obviously, there's technical stuff as far as movement and positioning things as far as, you know, if you read this, what does that mean? But for the most part, it's about what do you see and put yourself in the best position.
All right. And patron Amir asks, with a program like Stanford, which has a history of winning, how do you alleviate any pressure from freshmen about having immediate success?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think we can alleviate that stress. I think we have to help them manage it, to be honest. I think they come in with the expectation is if they don't win a national championship, they're going to fail. And so we have to help them kind of put that aside, like I mentioned earlier in this conversation, just worry about being the best player you can be, and that stuff's going to take care of itself. And so we spend a lot of time with that kind of messaging. You know, I think I mentioned this before, but I meet with them a lot. A lot of the stuff I talk about with the freshmen is just managing a lot of those expectations, especially the ones that have to be on the court right away.
Nice. Next one's from patron Tracy Waite. So what is your message to the team during a timeout that you call when your team is behind? What do you want to accomplish?
Yeah, that's really tough to answer at this point because a lot of that's dependent on the situation. But most of the conversations are short and to the point about what, like, just be real about what's happening out there right now. You know, I mean, I'll just give a simple example is if we're passing better, we're going to side out better, we're going to be fine. It's more of just like, hey, it's pretty simple. We're hitting the ball out of bounds too much. So let's make sure we're hitting the ball in bounds. You know, and this isn't how I'd frame it, but along the topic, and then we need to pass better, or we need to put a little bit more pressure on for the serves, you know, and just show them some numbers, show them some statistics, and then let them go to work and execute the game plan. I think trying to fill it with a lot of other stuff just becomes counterproductive at some level.
Nice. And this one's from Joshua James. What was it like to take over a program that had been so successful for so long while you were a relatively young coach? And what were the biggest points of resistance with those players when you brought in your own changes to practices and games?
First part of that, being a young coach, yeah, I never really worried about my age as far as coaching. I did feel like, you know, I knew this was a big job, and I knew it had incredible expectations. You know, I came from a program that had similar expectations as far as making Final Fours and national championships, but this one, you know, obviously they've done it more often and consistently. And so for me, it was really motivating. I felt like it was a good change just to kind of keep me sharp and kind of a reset and trying to figure out, you know, how to kind of, reinvent myself as a coach, but retrofit or fit myself in to this place and what was going to work. So it was really inspiring. I looked at it more that way. And the second part of that question was what, Billy? Sorry, I lost it.
Yeah, were there any points of resistance from the players about like your own changes that you brought in?
Yeah, a lot about just everything that we wanted to change in the system, like how John wanted to play volleyball. It worked great for him, and it was, you know, obviously had incredible success, but it's not the way that I had taught things. And I was open to hearing what he did, but there are some things that I didn't know how to teach, and I wanted to make sure that we're bringing the things that we believed in. And so that was a lot of change, especially for a team that had just won. And that change for all athletes. It's hard, and it took them a while to embrace that. So I would say that was the biggest thing, just changing systems, changing some technical things. Those are the things that were most difficult. I'd say from a cultural standpoint, obviously I mentioned I didn't do as good a job as I wanted to, but the players were eager to get to know our staff, like everyone on staff, and to develop the relationships and that stuff. People have asked me that in the past, like, was that hard? And that part was easy. It was more about the changes in the gym that were a little bit more difficult.
Are there any areas you're diving into right now as a coach that you're trying to get better at or focus on during the kind of off season time?
I've been looking really hard at some things like out of system. But like that's like on the court. I really am trying to get better with it. So like on the court stuff, we're looking at that. We're always looking at, you know, how our other teams attacked us and what changes we need to make and what do we need to prepare and kind of what's the direction that the game's going. But personally, I'm just trying to figure out better ways to tell stories, you know, to help the players tell stories to themselves. I've been reading a lot of articles on that, just storytelling, and especially helping the players craft their own as opposed to me trying to craft those stories for them. Just the idea of them, like, you know, what is the message you're telling yourself all the time? What is the story you tell yourself before you're going to bed about yourself as a person, as a player, and all that? And I've just done a lot of research on that, being very positive for, especially for stress, for managing stress. And so I've been diving into that a little bit, trying to see how I can help our athletes a little bit better with that.
On that real quick, what would be, I know it's, it depends on the athlete, but what would be an example of maybe a positive story that an athlete can frame for themselves that would help them in games?
Yeah. I think one of them is, so I had a player that really struggled with big moments, kind of like I did, I guess, when I was a kicker in Pop Warner football in that moment. But like she really struggled in the big moment and was really concerned about making a run out of how she was going to play in the Final Four, you know, especially in front of a big crowd. And so the story that she was telling herself was, she kept, this is a little bit like visualization, but like the way that we framed it was story, was she kept telling herself about like who she's going to be in that moment, what her body's going to feel like. And then she started to kind of tell stories about herself making the play. Like, I'm going to be set at this point. It's going to be game point, and I'm going to get set at this point, and this is what I'm going to feel, and this is what I'm going to do. So it kind of like, it's a little bit like visualization, but it was, she wrote it down and her and I talked about it, and we like told each other that story. So then I could tell her that story as well at times, you know, and I could help kind of reinforce that. So I don't know if that exactly makes sense, but like, it's about trying to, it's about that preparation. And I think those, I think the visualization and the storytelling and the managing of the expectations all kind of work together in that space where if you start to tell yourself the right things and if you can write them down and reiterate those things to yourself, they start to become a reality and you can manage things better moving forward. At least that's the stuff I'm picking up from what I'm reading.
Yeah.
Does that make sense at all?
Yeah.
It's the first time I've had to articulate that.
It seems like also, if you can find examples when they have done it in the past, even if it's on a small scale, that could help kind of reinforce the truth of that story.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. And then also like if they've done it on a smaller, in a moment, like this is one of the things that with this athlete is they're really concerned about playing in front of 16,000 fans. And so finding the times when they did it in front of, 4,000 fans or whatever, like, and then talking about what's the difference there and them being able to tell themselves, there's no real difference in this. The volleyball's a volleyball. The set's a set. Like those people don't matter. I think all that storytelling, when it comes to that moment when they actually have to actually perform, then they can let go of all that because they've been telling themselves that story. This is no different than any other moment moving forward. Just using that example. So I think you're right, Billy. Looking for those opportunities to like reinforce that with them, and that helps give that story life and makes it real.
Is there a story you're telling right now to your players, or that you're hoping your players are crafting with the unknowns about your season that's, not that far away?
I wouldn't say that we've gotten that far as storytelling. Right now, the only thing we're talking about a lot is just how lucky we are to kind of be part of history right now. How lucky if we get a season, we are going to be to have a season. How lucky we are for our health. Like we're focusing a lot. If we're telling any story, it's about the gratitude for the opportunities that we have, and what we're going through. And instead of like being mired in the idea of that this really sucks, it's like, no, this is historic. Like we're part of history. This is something that your grandkids are going to ask you about. And this is something that's going to be written in history books. And so remember it. And like, let's be in it. Let's be aware of what it is instead of just being really upset about it, which is not easy to do, but I don't know, like, Why focus on all the negatives about it? Let's just focus on whatever positives we can find. And there's a lot, there's plenty in there.
Mm-hmm. No, that sounds like you're, thoughtfully crafting a story, and it seems like the right story to tell right now, because it's a challenging, confusing time. So that's a good way to look at it.
It's interesting how close like buying into your story and like your team's culture probably is.
Yeah, I would hope that they all kind of work together, right? All that stuff kind of, it's all cohesive. I mean, I think because it all lies in the same principles, it all lies in the same ideas. And so I would hope that everyone's stories they're telling kind of fit inside their culture, if that makes sense.
All right, last question. It's from patron Cade Smith. What would you go back and tell yourself in your first year of coaching that would have helped you to avoid certain failures?
It's not about you, man. And what you do and who you are as a coach or what you do is not who you are. And don't let those two intersect. Like if the team's struggling, doesn't mean you're struggling. It's going to be okay. You're still a good person. Just means you got to be better as a coach. That to me is like where I failed most is, team and struggle, and I take it personal. And that was not good early.
Yeah, that's a great message. Do you have the same message for your players?
100%. And I'd say it to every kid that comes to our camp. So that's a mess. I think that message about like never confusing who you are for what you do is, and it's harder now than it was when we were kids or when I was a kid because there's so many things, there's so many people looking at, Instagram followers and liking and all that. I mean, everyone's talked about this stuff like ad nauseum, but it's so much harder to remove who you are from what you do, I think, at this time, or what you look like or whatever. It's like, know who you are as a person. You're going to be fine. Don't let that other stuff creep in.
Yeah. Well, that's a great message. A great way to end it. Well, thanks so much for, again, spending the time, Kevin, and being willing to dive into some history. I think that was fun to
that's cool.
Explore that area and look forward to, I hope we get to watch you this fall. We'll keep crafting a story that's helpful along the way as we go. So
cool.
Thanks again
good
for the time.
Good luck, Billy, playing. Yeah, good luck, Billy, playing. And John, I hope you guys have a season as well. Sorry about the end of your season. How it had to be tough and abrupt.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a surprise, but it's so much different when we're all in it together. You know, if it was just us, yeah. we'd feel pretty down, but you know, we're all in it. And like you said, I think we're going through history together, and let's see if we can stand for something and get better through it.